from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, Governor Jerry Brown and legislative leaders have reached an agreement on a $96 billion spending plan. That's 5 days ahead of the deadline to pass the state budget, and many Democrats had hoped this year's budget surplus would mean major restorations and services for the poor. But they ultimately agree to the governor's more conservative budget projections. The budget uses a controversial new formula to allocate education funding, steering more money to districts where over half of the students are poor or learning English. The budget plan also partially restores mental health services and adult dental care for the poor. We'll discuss the budget, what's in it, and what's not, next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. A compromise budget deal with an emphasis on spending for education and a restoration of recession social service cuts was worked out yesterday between Governor Jerry Brown and California legislative leaders for the fiscal year beginning July 1st. The Assembly and Senate have until Friday to approve the $96 billion spending plan, and the governor has until the end of the week to sign it into law. And in this opening Forum Hour, we want to highlight the budget plan and get analysis and reaction to it. And joining us for the hour from Sacramento is Scott Detrow, who is Sacramento Bureau Chief for KQED Radio. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning.
Glad to have you aboard. Also glad to have with us this morning H.D. Palmer, Deputy Director for External Affairs with the California Department of Finance. Good morning, H.D.
Good to be back with you, Michael.
Good to have you back. And we also have a couple of legislative leaders with us. Daryl Steinberg is with us, California State Senate President Pro Tempore. And he has, of course, been opposed to Proposition 38. Glad to have you with us again.
Good morning. Good to be with you, Michael.
Also glad to have Senator Bob Huff with us this morning, Senate Minority Leader with the California State Senate, representing California's 29th District, which includes parts of Orange, San Bernardino, and Los Angeles counties. And welcome, Senator Huff.
Thanks, Michael. Good to be here.
Glad to have you here. Let me begin kind of with an overview from you, Scott Detrow, if I may. This is been called a compromise. I suppose when you really deconstruct it, though, the governor got a bit more than what he wanted as opposed to the legislators getting what they wanted. In fact, you were saying that the education bill, which I wanted, the education part of the budget, which I want to talk to you about, was kind of tweaked.
That's right. I think it's fair to say that Governor Brown came out pretty well in this budget. He had wanted to spend a lower amount of money. The ultimate plan does use the governor's spending total of about $96 billion. And you're right. He did come through this with his plan to direct more money to poor school districts where more than half of students are either poor or learning English. But legislative leaders did get several concessions from the governor, and they were able to push through some of the priorities they had highlighted. On the Senate side, Senate Democrats wanted to start to restore funding for mental health benefits, for dental benefits in the Medi-Cal system. They were able to do that, albeit a little slower pace than they had initially hoped for, a little less spending than they had hoped for. And on the Assembly side, Assembly Speaker John Perez had really pushed for middle-class scholarships for families making less than $150,000 in California colleges and universities. He was able to achieve that, but again, on kind of a delayed pace. It'll take 4 years to phase in that program. Legislators did tweak the education plan that Governor Brown had been talking about for the past few months, and they were able to send more money to every school district in California, and that had been a big point of contention. They were saying, look, we've had years and years and years of cuts to education funding. We want to make sure every school district is getting more money, and in the end, that base grant in this complicated education funding formula that every school district gets was increased. So that was considered a win for legislative leaders.
And let's talk about this also from the standpoint of other you mentioned, for example, mental health care funding and dental care for medical recipients. That was what Daryl Steinberg wanted, who we'll be talking with. And you mentioned the scholarships that John Perez was advocating. What else the Democrats on the legislative side get out of this as opposed to Governor Brown?
They had been pushing very hard to restore funding for California's court system, which has seen hundreds of millions of dollars in funding reductions over the last few years. The judicial system had been very aggressive about saying, look, we need more money. Our court system is bogged down. There are delays in trials because we aren't having enough money. We're having to slow down construction on courts, things like that. And Governor Brown had basically said, no, they're fine. They don't really need any extra money. Both the Senate and Assembly had said, we want an extra $100 million over what was in the governor's May budget plan. And they ultimately ended up with $63 million in extra money. The Democrats on the conference committee that voted on all these various proposals on Monday night were grumbling. They were saying, well, I guess this is better than nothing. We wanted more, and I guess we'll be satisfied with this. But that's kind of the essence of a compromise all around, isn't it? People being a little bit grumpy with the final outcome but getting part of what they wanted.
Not everybody being happy. In fact, maybe everybody being somewhat unhappy. But is it safe to say, Scott, that the governor – I mean, if you can use these words, and I use them respectfully, I hope, and somewhat with trepidation, but that the more liberal legislators' efforts to expand health and welfare spending were, to some extent, turned back.
I think certainly less money was spent than they wanted to spend. But Governor Brown did give them extra money in these various priority areas. But I think Brown can walk away claiming victory because he wanted to spend less money. He wanted to be conservative about the amount of tax revenue that California is going to take in over the next few years. And he wanted to bank some money aside. Actually, all three sides did want to bank money for future years. And they ended up kind of socking a bit more than $1 billion into a fund for next year. But yeah, I think the big picture here that everybody was happy to talk about once the deal was struck was, look, we've had, you know, at one point a $40 billion deficit. We had the last couple of years $15 billion deficits. This year we're talking about what to do with extra revenue, and we're spending a bit less than we wanted to going in. So it's a much different situation. And of course, Brown was being a little bit of a naysayer yesterday, saying, yeah, but it's a slow economic recovery. We're not quite sure what's going to happen over the next year, so we still need to be cautious.
Again, Scott Detrow is Sacramento Bureau Chief for KQED Radio, and H.D. Palmer is Deputy Director for External Affairs with the California Department of Finance. H.D. Scott just mentioned the budget surplus, and they were talking about not only 3 years ago facing a $60 billion deficit, but the estimates were so wide apart. Governor Brown was talking about $1.2 billion more, and legislative independent financial analyst $4.4 billion. We're going to be able to pay down the debt and have a rainy day fund as a result of all this?
We are. The governor pretty much had two concerns going into this. One was the fact that the legislative analyst, as you note, had a higher revenue projection than the governor has in the mayor vision. The analyst was about $3.2 billion higher than our projection, and about 80% of the difference between our two forecasts was in their assumption on capital gains, which is the most volatile source of revenue that's out there to try to estimate or forecast. And as the analysts said in their projections coming out, there's going to be a downside risk on revenues no matter whose forecast you use. And legislature, if you use our higher forecast, there's going to be an even greater risk. And the governor didn't think that was a prudent way to go forward. The second thing that he was concerned about is having an ongoing level of spending that the budget couldn't sustain. And so during the negotiations with the legislature over the last week or so, we've been able to arrive in an area that addresses those two kind of overarching concerns of the governor's.
So when Assembly Speaker Perez says that about $1 billion for future years is in the savings bank, that figure is correct?
The budget reserve stands at just under $1.1 billion for the so-called special fund for economic uncertainty. So we think that given the risks that are out there and given things that we don't know yet, such as does wildland fire costs exceed what we've got in the budget, we think that's a prudent level at the moment.
And let's talk a bit with you, if we could, HD, about the commitment to Medicare expansion, which was emphasized yesterday when the legislators and the governor presented this deal. Doctors are still bracing for a 10% medical rate cut, aren't they?
That's correct. The full Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals refused to hear an appeal from the plaintiffs in that case.
Excuse me, so not only doctors, pharmacists and, you know, other health.
Right, and durable medical providers and so forth. So those are scheduled to go into effect. But I think it's important to note one thing here. This is structured in a way so that if providers can demonstrate that a rate increase is going to provide a barrier to access, then the administration has and will either reduce that amount of increase or eliminate it entirely. There's one case of a pediatric subacute facility in San Diego where it was pretty well demonstrated and this is a facility that's outside of the scope of the court ruling, that these rate increases were going to be able to – were going to block their ability to serve children. And so the Department of Healthcare Services reviewed that, and they said you're not going to get a rate increase. So that structure is in place so that if a rate increase would provide a barrier to access, it can be reduced or eliminated outright.
Well, the Democrats are in control of the legislature now, and from my understanding, they wanted to make it easier to obtain public insurance more than the governor wanted to spend. So the administration wanted more restrained health care spending.
Well, we are at the forefront really nationally of implementing the Affordable Care Act, and we're going to begin doing that this year. And as we take on greater responsibility for insuring either the uninsured or those that are being covered by the counties are going to achieve a certain amount of savings. And what the budget agreement reflects is that some of those county savings are going to be redirected to fund the ongoing operations of social service programs such as CalWORKs, the state's Welfare to Work program.
And as long as you mention the counties, let me get back to education for a moment with you. The school districts are going to have more spending discretion. What does that look like in terms of dollars?
Well, once it's fully implemented and it's now going to be 8 years instead of seven, you're looking at the total value of the local control funding formula being about $65 billion. And so one of the things that a lot of people have focused on properly is the focus on those populations of students that are the most difficult or have the greatest challenges of learning, those who are English learners, those who come from families of low income, foster youth. So there will be additional growth under the formula that's going to be targeted to them. But the other side of the equation is that the governor's formula continues and expands somewhat the so-called categorical flexibility, where programs that had been siloed, money that had been siloed to go to school districts but that could only be spent on a particular purpose, they can now apply to whatever their top local priority is. And that issue of local control, subsidiarity, as the governor called it in the State of the State address, is paramount. So we believe that the formula, as modified, still achieves the governor's goals, but again provides greater flexibility, greater authority, and greater accountability at the local level.
We've got H.C. Palmer on the line here from the California Department of Finance. Just one more question about health care. I want to bring our legislators into this discussion. There's still a lot of fighting that's going to go on, isn't there, about helping the uninsured, even with the Affordable Care Act and California being kind of ahead of things, as you pointed out, and also just with the county health programs?
One of the things that we did in terms of trying to address that is that there will still be some money available at the local level as an insurance policy, if you will, on dealing with the uninsured as we begin to phase in the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. That was a great concern going forward, and I think, and I'll defer to the legislatures to discuss that, I think we've been able to address that in a satisfactory manner.
Agree, Daryl Steinberg?
I agree with what HD said, and in terms of the big picture here, I'm very pleased with the budget, and I think we have to have some perspective. Look at in 2009, as Scott said a moment ago, when I began my first year as leader, we faced a $42 billion budget deficit, a $100 billion budget. It was almost half the budget, and of course, we've made some dreadful but necessary cuts. The voters passed Proposition 30, and we vote for this budget on Friday with the budget back in black, balanced, and better prepared to weather the storms ahead. We were able, working cooperatively with the governor, to, yes, take his more conservative revenue numbers, but to find ways by phasing in some of our priorities, some of the people's priorities, to get some positive things done. 3 million people without dental insurance, low-income people, mostly working. Now we're not going to have to show up at emergency rooms to deal with a root canal or an abscessed tooth. Mental health, which is always at the bottom of the funding priority list, is now at the top. $142 million to build 2,000 crisis stabilization and residential beds so that people don't have to linger in the emergency rooms or in jails or on the streets when they're living with a serious mental health issue. And then one that didn't get mentioned in the education budget, I took the whole Senate, including Senator Huff, accompanied me, of course, down to Long Beach to look at Long Beach's model linked learning program in high school, where they put academic standards, high standards, together with career application and begin sort of the European model of training young people for the workforce. We got $250 million to pretty dramatically expand career technical education programs in high school. So balanced budget, pay down $1 billion of debt, $1 billion-plus reserve, and we found the room to fund some essential priorities. It's I would take this budget compared to the last five 8 days a week.
Well,
not that I'm happy or anything.
I understand.
It's a good thing.
Well, your buoyant optimism is certainly refreshing to hear. But I know that there are things that you're unhappy about here because you wanted more social services restored and you wanted a lot more to go into not only restoration but to expand social services.
Yes, but I don't want to overstate that because the other thing that I know because I. What went through 2009 and 2011 with these multi-billion-dollar deficits. And the last thing we want is to go back. And so, you know, as a Democrat who believes in a lot of these programs, I'm actually happy that we were able to accommodate our priorities within a more conservative revenue estimate because that means that we're not going to have to cut these restorations because we overestimated. And in fact, there may be room if the economy grows as fast as the legislative analyst believes it will to be able to invest more next year. You mentioned the Medi-Cal rate issue. That's a very serious health access issue. You can provide all the insurance you want, but if there aren't enough providers to be able to care for people, they're not going to get the health care that they need. And so being able to find the room to compensate doctors and pharmacists and hospitals more adequately is something that we ought to look to do in the future. We have a better chance to do that with the way we handled this year's budget than if we had taken the higher revenue estimates and spent more.
We're talking with California State Senator, President Pro Tem Daryl Steinberg. I have to ask you quickly, if I can, Senator Steinberg, just about couple of things that, aside from the social services, have upset people. One is the diversion by Governor Brown of $500 million on cap-and-trade fee revenues. That's from clean energy and pollution abatement projects to essentially help balance the budget. And there's a lot of concern that I've been seeing flying around the Internet about therapies for 500 autistic children, which was just shut down.
Well, on the latter, I'm not happy that we were not able to get applied behavioral therapy, ABA therapy for autistic kids who were in the Medi-Cal program. I authored the lead bill 2 years ago that requires private insurance companies to cover this coin of the realm therapy that helps autistic kids. And we tried to get this funded in the budget for Medi-Cal, for the Medi-Cal program and kids who qualify. We were not able to do so because of some of the constraints, but it's certainly something I'm going to look to prioritize next year or even sooner if we can. On the issue of cap and trade, you know, I think it's important to also recognize that we passed a major implementation plan for Prop 39, the clean energy program. There's a lot of money going to clean energy. And last year's budget, the governor said, and we agreed, that if there's cap-and-trade revenue, the first $500 million ought to go to fund environmental programs that are currently funded largely by the general fund. This year, he actually made a compromise and said, well, let's make that a loan instead of a permanent take. It's a one-time loan. It'll get paid back. And it gave us the headroom, if you will, to be able to restore dental care for 3 million Californians who have gone without, to restore mental health funding, to be able to fund scholarships for middle-class students. So, you know, budgets are always a choice. And I think we made the correct priorities. And if the economy keeps going strong, we keep paying down debt, we are prudent about this, there'll be room to fund these other priorities, including more investment in green and clean technology.
Daryl Steinberg, again, is California State Senate President Pro Tem, and Bob Huff is Senate Minority Leader with the California State Senate, representing a number of counties in the 29th District, Orange, San Bernardino, and Los Angeles. And You know, you look at this, I suppose, Senator Huff, on the face of things, going against a supermajority, and nevertheless, what we're hearing here is a balanced budget, surplus, more conservative revenue estimates. All that would sound good, I would think, to the GOP, does it?
Well, you have to play the hand that's dealt to you, and the hand that was dealt to us was to back the most conservative voice in the room, which was the governor. But, you know, frankly, if we were building our own budget, just like there's many ways to build a house, we would build a budget differently. And I think you'd be disappointed if I wasn't seeing a different strain of kumbaya than what we're hearing here right now. But, you know, the reality is this budget is still built upon the backs of a huge tax increase. We have concerns that while we are restoring programs, we're also growing new programs to a level that can't be sustained when the temporary taxes are eliminated. And while we're very thankful about the education reform, or excuse me, the education money, we're doing it without reforming the process, which, you know, we're missing a great opportunity there to get a twofer. But all in all, you know, I'm pleased with the overall tone. You know, we're, you know, not going to sit here and throw rocks at it. There are things we'd do differently, some significant things we'd do differently. We're disappointed there's not a rainy day fund. We do think some of these revenues are volatile, but, you know, we voted for worse budgets in the past.
What about the priorities, though? What would you do to change those priorities, or would you have done, or with a wish list? Or?
Well, I think you'd see more debt repayment. That's where the governor is headed originally, and you'd see a higher rainy day fund. You know, this legislature is allergic to a rainy day fund. They think that's money not spent on growing programs. And the reality is there's nothing more cruel than starting a program you can't sustain, and that's why going through the recession was so painful. There was a lot of programs that were good, such as the dental care that was cut back. You know, you talk about the care for autistic children. Well, we had a program for that last year, and the Democrats killed that. That was called Healthy Families, and I think Senator Steinberg was trying to protect that as well. But, you know, the point is you had a bipartisan agreement to actually tax some managed health care that would buy back some federal funds and keep some of these programs going, and in the infinite wisdom up here, that was killed, and so we have some unintended consequences. But another thing is, you know, at the AB 32 cap and trade, why is it that that money is now being loaned to the general fund to grow programs? Now, there's a very creative way about associating that to dental care and some other positive programs, but you could just as easily line it over to employee pay raises or some of the egregious things we don't like.
Also, in the budgetary hearings, the committee hearings, I understand Republicans wanted to see the proposed spending on Prop 39, about $428 million into the energy program. There was some real division there, wasn't there?
Well, whenever you have a pot of money, there's going to be some different ideas about how to spend it. But all in all, you know, we're not fighting over that as much as we are just the overall need to have a healthy balance so that we can weather this in a year or two down the road.
So you're playing the hand that's dealt.
We're playing the hand that's dealt.
All right. Well, let me give those of you who are listening to this program an opportunity to join the game here. It's a very serious one. It's the budget that we're talking about, the $960 billion spending plan. And if you have some thoughts, if you have some comments, or if you have questions, you are welcome to join us at our toll-free number, which is available to you now. It's 866-733-6786. And we do welcome your call, so feel free to join the program. Again, toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also email us. Our email address is forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments immediately onto our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. Other ways to communicate with us, you can go to Twitter and tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, or you can go to our Facebook page. Talking with Senators Daryl Steinberg and Bob Huff, with H.D. Palmer from the California Department of Finance, and with Scott Detrow from KQED Sacramento Bureau. You can join us. Again, we welcome your calls. Toll free, 866-733-6786. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about the new California budget, which boosts education, restores some social services. Governor Jerry Brown and legislative leaders have reached an agreement. It's a $96 billion spending plan, and they reached the agreement 5 days ahead of the deadline to pass the state budget. Many Democrats had hoped that this year's budget surplus would mean major restorations in services for the poor, but they ultimately agree to the governor's more conservative budget projections, and the budget uses a controversial new formula to allocate education funding, steering more money to districts where over half of the students are poor or learning English, or part of foster care. The budget plan also partially restores mental health services and adult dental care for the poor. And you may want to weigh in here on your reaction to the budget or any questions that you may have. Again, you can join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or tweeting us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum, excuse me, or going to our Facebook page. In fact, we asked listeners to post on Facebook page if they agree with Governor Brown's budget plan to spend extra money to school districts where more than half the students are poor or learning English or in foster care. And I just want to read a couple of these responses. Oscar says, some schools in our state need more help than others. It's about time we started helping them. Andy says, yes, publicly funded education is not simply a pooling of resources. It is a societal goal to have an informed, educated citizenry so that we have a healthy democracy, not an oligarchy. Innovative means to more effectively reach that goal should be entertained, if not actively encouraged. And we also have a comment on our Facebook page from Wendy, who says that she would like to give a shout-out to Senator Steinberg for helping to make that increase that bed capacity where mental health is concerned. Actually, I want to go to your calls, but let me go first, H.D. Palmer, to you on a question from a listener. It says, last time we had a rainy day fund for a surplus was when Gray Davis had $2.1 billion in reserve. An energy crisis was manufactured that, this is the listener saying this, that California robbed California of $2.1 billion. Democratic president at the time stood aside and let the plundering of the reserve occur. What is Jerry Brown doing to prevent that from reoccurring?
Well, one of the things that we're doing is, number one, ensuring that we do have an adequate reserve, we believe, of, in this budget environment of $1.1 billion. But secondly, not to overcommit the state to spending at a level that the budget can't sustain. One of the other things that contributed to the reserve being drained, as the caller indicates, was the fact that revenues were riding the rocket because of the dot-com boom. And people thought that was going to go on forever, and the legislature at the time decided to increase the ongoing level of spending. And so when the dot-com boom went spectacularly bust and those temporary revenues evaporated, you still had a higher ongoing level of spending at the state that couldn't be sustained by the revenues. And that also contributed to that $2-plus billion budget reserve being drained. We don't want to repeat that again, which is why the governor was most insistent on saying we can't have ongoing spending that this budget can't sustain. And that's one of the insurance policies, if you will, that is in place so that we can maintain that level of a budget reserve.
Confident of that being in place, Senator Huff? I go to you.
I was thinking about something else. Sorry, repeat the question.
Well, we were just talking about the budget reserve and what happened to it back when Gray Davis was governor, and sort of warding off against that being eaten up by energy crisis or anything of that sort.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the whole nature of the future. It's unknown. And that's why Republicans are more insistent on a rainy day fund that is a little more difficult to get into. So we've talked in this budget about a $1.1 billion reserve that could disappear overnight. The rainy day fund, which was a compromise in the 2009 budget, has been kicked off, and it's just the Democrat leadership refuses to take a vote of the people who generally like the idea of putting money away that can't be easily taken away, so that when you have revenues that drop below a certain level, that there are some reserves to help soften the landing so you don't have the tough extremes, the boom-bust cycle that we have been in the past.
Can I get a response, Senator Steinberg, on this from you?
Well, sure. I think that there are three things that ought to assure people that we won't go through what we went through in the late 1990s. Number one, we did agree to the conservative revenue estimate that the governor put forward. Number two, there is a reserve of over $1 billion, but there's a third factor that's hardly been talked about. And that is the governor and the legislature are committed to, and the budget reflects this, an increased repayment of existing debt. You remember back in the late 90s and the early 2000s, in fact, Governor Schwarzenegger's first year in office, he borrowed $15 billion to try to deal with the state's deficit. Well, we're still paying on that debt and other kinds of debt. So in this budget, just some numbers, $4.3 billion over the last two budget years, actually, to pay down debt on the education side. And then on the non-education side, in this year's budget, we are agreeing to pay down $2.3 billion. And so that's another way to essentially deal with the rainy day issue by making sure that you don't have these liabilities on your books. And we could have spent that money on program. We could have increased education more. We could have funded some of the safety net cuts that are not restored as part of this budget. But we're doing the prudent thing to pay down the debt.
Michael, this is Scott Detrow. I was just going to hop in with some context on that. One aspect that we didn't really talk about when we were going through the various aspects of the budget deal is that one way that this final deal did free up extra money for education spending without going over that $96 billion spending total that Governor Brown had pushed for was a little bit of a slowing down of that debt repayment plan. This budget still does send a lot of money to repay debt. But an additional $650 million in education debt spending was kind of pushed toward spending on the new education plan, also on Common Core implementation. More than $1 billion is going to go to school districts to do that.
Let me go to your calls, and we begin, Stacey, with you. Welcome to Forum. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes. I'm very concerned that this lowering the threshold or increasing the threshold, rather, from 50% to 55% might actually encourage school districts to chase out middle-income families in order to retain larger savings. Our education spending, as you know, has been cut beyond the bone, and we need to have, at first, adequate level of spending and then think about doing it on a weighted student formula that exceeds a threshold of 50%.
You know, I'd like, H.D., you to address that. I mean, that kind of anxiety over schools pushing out middle-class families to get to that 55% number, that possibility is real, isn't it?
Well, one of the things that was part of the compromise was that some in the legislature felt that the base grant that's part of the weighted student formula was not sufficient for those districts that did not have higher concentrations of English learners or students from low-income families. It might be instructive for the listeners to understand very basically what the structure of the formula is. All districts will receive a base grant. They will not receive anything less than they currently receive. That's called a hold harmless provision. Then there will be a supplemental grant that will be provided for school districts based upon the percentage of their students who are either from low-income families, foster youth, or English learners. And thirdly, if a district's composition is more than, you know, has a majority of those groups of students, there would be a concentration grant on top of that. Some legislators, some districts felt that the original proposal didn't have enough in the base grant to address those districts that didn't have those higher concentrations. And so part of the agreement was to boost up that that base grant. So that was one aspect of trying to address some of those concerns. And there also is another provision, and I'll defer to Senator Steinberg on this, on getting districts back to where their funding level was at the 2007-2008 level, which was the peak right before the recession knocked the revenues into a tailspin.
Do you want to comment on that, Senator Steinberg?
Yes, of course. H.D. said it well. The governor's original proposal and his May revision proposal went in the right direction, but it wasn't a proposal that the legislature was willing to support for the reasons I think expressed, the fear expressed by the caller. And H.D. is right. As part of the compromise, we maintained this principle that we want to get more money to disadvantaged youngsters, but at the same time, we fixed the formula so that no district would get any less than what they received in 2007-08 adjusted for inflation, because 07-08 was sort of the high water mark the year before the recession began. But there's another piece of this which is significant. By simplifying the funding formula and giving more discretion to school districts, while having some significant accountability, by the way, for performance, you eliminate the very significant overhead that goes with the administration of a lot of these so-called categorical programs. And that was one of the reasons as well for the legislature agreeing with the governor that we ought to simplify the formula. So it isn't perfect. Nothing is. It can be adjusted annually. And yet I think that its strengths far outweigh whatever problems it may have because of the simplification, because it gets more money to kids who need it the most. But we found the right way to make sure that all districts are held harmless at the same time.
Still have a lot of people asking questions, and I just would defer to you on this one, if I might, Daryl Steinberg. Maybe just to clarify, Becky in Livermore writes, Livermore has a couple of schools with over 55% English learners, but the district as a whole is less than 55%. Would those two schools get supplemental funding for their 55%, or must the entire district be over 55%?
No. Every one of those youngsters who meet the low-income, foster care, free and reduced lunch definition will get a supplemental grant. The concentration grant for districts that have over 55% poverty is above that. But frankly, it's a very small amount relatively to the base grant and the supplemental grant. But every low-income child, regardless of their district, will get extra money.
And I want to go to more of our callers. First, though, Scott Detrow, if I could bring you back into this. We're talking, as long as we're talking about education, the junior colleges are still going to have hundreds of thousands shut out of their classes. In California, even with Proposition 30, and spending is spending less per pupil than most states in the union.
That's right. I think the conversation really ended up focusing on basic education, K through 12 education, in this budget negotiation. I think the Assembly Speaker's office, John Perez's office, would point you toward this scholarship program that they kind of made their top priority in this budget plan. But like I mentioned earlier, that in order to keep to the lower spending numbers is going to be slowly phased in. So that first part of it doesn't really start until next year, and then it'll take 4 years to get up to that level that they were initially talking about.
And let me get up to another caller here from San Jose. We welcome Rachel. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. I'm a patients' rights advocate here in San Jose, California, and I just wanted to express my excitement about the new budget's investment in crisis mental health services, Steinberg's proposal there. Being on the ground here and working with people every week who are in psychiatric hospitals who are just waiting for those beds at crisis residential programs to open, it's really thrilling to see this really smart investment that's going to allow more programs to get started and really have those startup costs covered.
Well, thank you, Rachel, for those comments. Appreciate hearing from you. Although, A.C. Palmer, the budget takes about $300 million back from county health departments in advance of federal money coming into so-called Obamacare. He's embraced that now, so we can use it freely. But the counties have been saying that's going to cripple them, and since there's still so many uninsured.
Well, I don't know if I would say taking it back. What we're proposing to do is that as we begin to implement the Affordable Care Act, we're going to be picking up the responsibility, fiscal and provision of care, for individuals who are currently receiving care through the county budgets. That is going to generate savings to the counties. And what our proposal is to redirect those savings into some of the health and human service programs like CalWORKs, the Welfare to Work program, and the child care that's associated with it. As the governor said at the May revision, we don't want to pay for those same services twice. And we believe that we have a system in place with this agreement that will allow that to occur, and we can redirect some of those savings to fund the ongoing operations of the state's Welfare to Work program while still leaving an adequate amount of money available that can be targeted toward the uninsured at the local level as we begin to phase in this significant and historic change in how healthcare is provided in California.
Can I go to you on this too, Scott Detrow?
On the healthcare issue, sure. This was something that kind of dropped off the map a little bit in that it was not part of the final budget negotiations because both the Assembly and Senate budget plans passed earlier did put that $300 million spending level in place. So there was a little bit of confusion in the hours after the deal was struck on Monday saying, wait a second, what happened to the Medicare proposal? This will certainly change from year to year going forward. There's a lot of unknowns right now. The biggest unknown, of course, is how many people who are currently eligible for Medi-Cal would sign up once California begins to expand the process last year, because, of course, the federal government would not be paying the full cost for those people. The cost estimates of this have varied widely, and as part of the proposal, there's a little bit of an understanding that that once the real cost, the real savings are known in the coming years, this formula of what the counties would kind of give back to the state would be changed going forward. But there certainly had been a lot of concern on the county level saying, wait a second, just because we're expanding Medi-Cal doesn't mean that suddenly our county hospitals are not going to be having to do a lot of work and having a lot of costs.
Well, before we go to more listener calls, Scott, I'd like to ask you to opine about what if the governor's revenues are low and there's more money to spend? What happens to that money? Is it going to the reserve, or was there a deal with the Democrats on how to spend it?
There was a lot of talk from the Democrats on the conference committee. The way this works is the governor, Senator Steinberg, Speaker Perez, and others came to a deal on the broad points, and then a conference committee of senators and assembly members kind of voted it through. And they were saying, hey, we would be happy to come back in January and take a look at this extra money and increase spending on issues like courts, go from that $60 million to more toward our $100 million goal. Governor Brown was asked about that yesterday, and he was a little less enthusiastic. He said, first, let's see what happens with the revenue coming in. There are no hard plans to kind of take a second crack if the revenue is more than expected. And as has already been pointed out, a lot of this does come down to the stock market. There are always wide fluctuations on that. And we have had several months of pretty solid stock revenue coming in. But of course, you know, as anyone who's been alive the last 5 years knows, that can change very quickly.
Scott Detrow again is Sacramento bureau chief with KQED Radio, and our next caller is Mary. Mary, good morning.
Good morning. Just wanted to weigh in on the budget discussion. We have been advocating for child care reinvestments. And while the Assembly had put forth $250 million in reinvestments, the actual final budget falls a little bit short. We can be proud of what was passed. However, going forward, we're hoping that the governor really sees investments in childcare as part of his overall strategy when it comes to the local control formula and identifying the needs of low-income children and English language learners even earlier before they enter kindergarten, because we know that brain development and social-emotional development happens way before. And if those children have access to high-quality early learning opportunities, that's only going to support what happens later on.
Well, we thank you for the call. Senator Steinberg, get a comment from you?
I agree with the caller. Child care was an example of where we were able to do something and help alleviate the deeper cuts made in that area over the last several years, but not enough to restore what has been lost. And certainly, child care is more than just child care. It's also about early childhood education. And the caller's right. Every study shows that early brain development and early education leads to better educational outcomes for young people and better lives. And so it's an area, again, where because we took the more conservative revenue projections, if the economy grows and the revenue grows greater than what we anticipate or what we agreed to, there may be room to do some more in areas like childcare and early childhood education.
Let me bring you back into this conversation, if I may, Senator Huff. And again, Senator Bob Huff is Senate Minority Leader in the California State Senate. With the supermajority, just how much did Republicans, if you can speak for your party here or for you, that matter, you personally, how much did you feel you were really playing a role in being architects or being contributors in a major architectural way to this budget?
Well, certainly a lot of the Republican principles have been adopted by the governor. And to that degree, we were promoting most of his details. To the degree that we're not at the table when they're making the final decisions, it's a little bit frustrating. I mean, when you think about it, we're almost giddy about the opportunity to have more revenue to spend on new programs. And yet, what we haven't even talked about today is $180 billion pension liabilities. And the rest of that wall of debt that the governor brought up so artfully last year about this problem. And so when you look at this budget that has grown from $103 billion, that was the general fund spending before we went into recession, if you back off some of the things that we have taken out of that calculation, we're at $108 billion now. The budget has continued to grow over the years. We feel like we've cut to the bone, but that's just not the reality. So when we're existing in a, I think everybody agrees, we don't have unlimited resources, and so you have to make some adult decisions. We would have enjoyed having more opportunity to make those. We were concerned about the debt. We're concerned about ramping up one-time programs can't be sustained. But, you know, it is what it is, and it's the hand we're played.
Are you also concerned about the fact that perhaps there's a precedent here that when revenues are hurting and when the money just doesn't seem to be there, that the voters will have a tax measure before them? Like Proposition 30?
Yeah. Again, this was built on the back of a tax measure, so that was called temporary by everybody. And what happens when that is gone? Have we done policies that reformed the system enough to generate the revenues to sustain it? So, of course, we're worried about returning to the boom bust because there's always an appetite to spend. Nobody wants to cut programs.
Let's go to more of our callers.
May I weigh in on that one?
I'm sorry, Daryl Steinberg. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's important to talk about Prop 30 for a moment because Prop 30 was never put to the voters with any kind of message or expectation that it would be used to dramatically increase spending. In fact, it came and the voters said yes to Prop 30 at the end of one of the worst periods of cutting, real cuts, like the elimination of dental care for all low-income Californians, like the cuts to mental health, like the cuts to education and higher education in modern state history. And so what Prop 30 really did was stop the bleeding, because I would dare say that even the majority of my Republican colleagues were not supportive of continuing to cut education and higher education and some of these essential public services. And so, you know, that revenue, the Prop 30 revenue, ultimately runs out after 7 years. And we do have to continue to put in place high-wage growth policies that allow the economy to grow, investing in things like career education in high schools and preparing young people for the workforce is one good way to do that. But, you know, it's all perspective. We are in much better shape than we were 4 or 5 years ago. That didn't happen by accident. The voters deserve a great deal of thanks by passing Prop 30, but the legislature and the governor have also made the tough cuts that allow us to be where we are today.
Well, I know Senator Huff indeed probably would like to respond to you, Senator Steinberg, but I'm eager to get a comment here before I hear from you on this, Senator Huff, from a listener named Richard, who writes, "The current rainy day fund discussion by the Republicans is somewhat troubling. In 1978, the rainy day fund established by Governor Brown was used as justification for Prop 13, and in my mind, the basis for all of the state's funding issues since then. How do we moderate the use of a fund like that and ensure it is used for positive needs and is not politicized?"
Well, we changed the rainy day fund formula. It was a bipartisan agreement that came to that. And so you're always going to have people that are interpreting the decisions. Just like in Prop 30, you know, Senator Steinberg talked about how they didn't go to the voters to dramatically increase spending. No, they went to the voters to dramatically stop the hemorrhaging of education. And it was sold to the voters that Prop 30 money would go to education. In fact, all we've done is the Prop 98 minimum guarantee. So we have, in fact, used it to grow other government funding in a way that is unsustainable.
We've got Ron on the line here. Ron, go ahead, please.
Thank you. My concerns go to even working with students and service projects under Hope and Beyond and going to Laguna Honda and heightening the spirits of patients and the nursing staff. And it's come to me after 15 years of being a volunteer court-appointed conservator that we're focusing on those people in need, but those people who care for these people, they've been cut back, days shortened, and there's a lot of depression that needs to be taken care of within the system of the workers in health care.
I thank you for that statement, Ron. Appreciate your call. I want to get another caller on here, and that's Tony from Pinal. Tony, join us.
Yeah, I have a question. During the recession, we had a sweep. It's known as SBX 34. That's soon to expire. Is that going to be extended? Basically, what it did, it took all categorical funds, all categorical programs, and allowed school districts to use that money at their discretion.
H.C. Palmer, can you help us here?
Yeah. What happened was that during the recession, when the revenues were tanking under the Schwarzenegger administration, in which I served, we put it to the school districts. We can't print money. What can we do to give you greater flexibility to be able to weather through this? And they said, break down the silos, the fences, whatever. Let us move these monies around that are currently siloed from Sacramento so we can target them to our highest local needs. That has continued and expanded under Governor Brown and in the local control funding formula. The difference being that under the Schwarzenegger administration, it was more fiscally driven, whereas under Governor Brown, it's more philosophically driven, which is his focus and emphasis on greater responsibility and accountability at the local level, and to let local school districts set those priorities and not have their spending policies dictated from Sacramento. And at the same time, as Senator Steinberg indicated earlier, being accountable.
Scott Detrow, a quick question for you from a listener who wants to know, has there been any reconsideration or restoring redevelopment agencies, elimination of these agencies? It's one of the most damaging decisions made in modern times. Our central cities need redevelopment now more than ever. Are you hearing anything along those lines, Scott?
Well, Senator Steinberg is waving at me that that's something the Senate has been taking a look at.
Yeah, we've got, if I may, SB 1, which is a bill I'm authoring, would recreate a different form of redevelopment, Michael. It would put back the so-called tax increment, but the money would have to be spent not on the old redevelopment program, but instead on projects that were consistent with SB 375, the bill that requires that development occur in ways that are more clean and green and reduce vehicle miles traveled. And so, yes, we are trying to bring back local economic development, but in a different way.
Well, that brings us to the conclusion here. Let me extend thanks to you, Daryl Steinberg, California State Senate President Pro Tem, and also thanks to Senator Bob Huff, who is Senate Minority Leader in the California State Senate. Thanks, too, to H.D. Palmer, Deputy Director of External Affairs with the California Department of Finance, and Scott Detrow, who is Sacramento Bureau Chief for this radio station, KQED Public Radio. And we are here with you on the Forum program every Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Engagement producer Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Senior editor Dan Zoll and executive producer Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.